Swing Thoughts. I was just informed by my friend and co-host that we haven't done one of these in 3 weeks. That's not like us. That noise you made, that if your impression of me when I said something like, hey, can we just take another can we take another week off? I was kind of like, this, you know, having to get the energy up for one of these shows.
As demanding as they are.
Oh, so demanding. That's the voice of Tim O'Connor, of course, author, raconteur, golfer, friend, coach. Tim O'Connor, myself, of course, golf spiritual leader. I think that feeling I have about wanting to do more episodes now that the meat of the golf season is over. I want to talk about that on today's program because that's how I'm feeling about golf in general. Welcome to Swing Thoughts, everybody. It's great to have you here. There's Tim. Look at him. Sweet man that he is. Hi, Tim.
Well, your hair looks fine. You were saying that you were worried with your hair this morning.
I just
not worried, but
yeah, I'm not worried. I just like I've had my headphones on now for 4 hours. I did that other show that I do, and my hair is. I need to probably should have a shower at some point.
Headphone head.
Yeah, I've got headphone hair. Yeah. That's definitely what I'm suffering from. Welcome, everyone, to this program brought to you by TaylorMade Golf. As always, Oscar Bravo, who is OscarBravo.com. And we certainly appreciate your support, whoever you are, wherever you are. I got a message from somebody that heard me on Carl's podcast, which you just did. Didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yep. I think it's going to go live. Let's see. Today's the 23rd. We're recording this. I think it's going to go live tomorrow, the 24th or the 25th.
Well, I got a text message, actually, or a DM. It's a direct message on the Instagram.
A DM.
As a kid. Yes, I got DM'd by somebody that is a mastermind factor coach, which is kind of what you are. Ooh. Are you not?
I am, yes. I don't fly like a flag, but yes, I got certified in that many moons ago. Yeah.
You don't fly it like a flag. Well, it's all I'm reading his profile. And so he heard me on Carl's podcast. And this guy is a Class A PGA professional in the Bay Area, California area.
Cool.
And heard me on Carl's podcast. And he has reached out to me because he's also, like myself, a non-drinker. And asked if I wouldn't mind sharing. How do you put it? If you didn't mind sharing, was thinking that would be a cool chat. Oh, I said, he wants me to come on his podcast and talk about being a non-drinker, a non-drinking
awesome.
Golfer. Yeah, man.
That I think would be really awesome.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
That's
so I'm going to do that.
I would definitely listen to. I thought maybe he was going to invite you to move down to California to become part of his instruction staff. And
that's right.
There you go. The only thing you'd have to worry about was hurricanes.
Whatever happened to Howard? Oh, yeah, he's working with some guy in California as an instructor. Hey,
Hangs
Tim.
On the strip.
Let's, speaking of instruction, how are things going in the world of getting unstuck, seven transformational practices for golf nerds, the award-winning book that is now available on the Amazon?
Well, it's going really well. I'm getting some reviews are starting to pop up on Amazon. Most of them are written by people I know, but like some friends said to me at our launch, I said, it was interesting. My son said that, you know, a lot of your friends, those are mostly your friends at your launch, and you're selling books to them. And I said that to a friend the next day who's in sales. He says, well, if your friends don't buy them, you don't have any chance.
That's
so
right.
It's a good start. Yeah. But anyways,
you can't convince people that love you to buy it.
So, yeah, the reviews are really positive. I'm hearing some things that I hadn't really considered before. That's always nice to get a different perspective on how your stuff lands. It's really been really nice. I'm getting people who have businesses who buy 10 or 12 of them and they give them away to clients and things. So, yeah, the word's getting out there on the book. So I'm really encouraged.
Well, I have it here in my home now. And by the way, I will make this offer again. If anyone wants to buy a book and have me autograph the foreword, I'm still available for that. I would happily do that, sign it.
I'm waiting for the first time that I get presented with the book that has your autograph on the foreword, and they ask me to sign it, because that'll happen.
Nevertheless, it's a great book. We want everyone to go check it out at Amazon. Is there a direct link, or just go to Amazon and look for Getting Unstuck?
Yeah, just go to Amazon Books, Tim O'Connor, Getting Unstuck, and you'll find it.
So back to this idea, a couple weeks ago, like we usually do in the off golf season, we usually, free people that are new, we usually do a show every couple of weeks. And you and I corresponded. I sent you a note saying, hey, can we just skip another week? And I think last week it was partly because of this theme I wanted to present to you today, which is golf fatigue. But last week it was the weather around here has been so nice.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It's, I don't know, in the 35 years I've lived in the Southern Ontario area, over time, the weather patterns have shifted. So the spring sucks. It's cold and crappy right until May. But the fall is so beautiful around here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, fall's always been great, but the temperatures, I don't talk about climate change, but whatever is the reason. Like, I played yesterday, and it was 26 degrees. Last Wednesday, when we were going to do the show, I said, I had a bunch of rounds booked. It was in the mid-20s, and I'm wearing shorts every day.
Yep. It is lovely. And then you mix that with things like no bugs, maybe a puff of wind, and glorious fall colors.
Yeah.
What's not to love?
Yeah. And so I want to get to this round that I was invited on, and it's been a while since we've updated people as to what we're doing. I just want to talk about this idea that I've been feeling, and maybe others do at this time of the year. We talk about, you know, I've been grinding away through the winter, then the spring, and then tournaments, and then events, and played a tournament with Charlie Fitz on the 7th of October. And that was the sort of last official tournament I played in. And I know it's different for you because you haven't played as much golf as you used to play or usually play. You've been working on your book. But I can tell you, I have played more golf in the last couple of years than I don't think for many, many years. There's a lot of rounds of golf. And this time of the year, I'm feeling a little bit fatigued around the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will tell you, I want to share with you and our friends that are listening that I have had a couple of minor pouty meltdowns. Yeah, I did. Yes, I have.
He is the GSL. He is enlightened. He has ascended, but he's still a human.
I've had two or three times, one in particular that manifested itself in me gouging out the tee box, where I just am tired. And I think what's happened to me is I have not, my resilience is low. My energy is low. And so my ability to just let shit go, I don't know why. And these are all in meaningless rounds. Like I threw a little pouty fit last, I don't know when it was, a couple days ago I was playing with some guys, good players. And I was an 8-iron on a par 3 and I just fatted it. And then I sort of swung, and then I came down, and I smashed the ground. I took a big gouge out of it, and I quickly put it back. Everyone kind of laughed at me. And then what made it even more hilarious is, I hit the ball. It was probably 30 yards off the green, and then I chipped in.
Of course.
And then everyone gave me shit for getting mad. So they're like, oh, I guess that fit you threw was, anyway, so...
I don't know. The line that I trot out every once in a while is that thank you for confirming your humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't care who you are. I said in my book that I don't care if you're the Dalai Lama or Eckhart Tolle. If you have golf in your soul, this game is going to piss you off.
Oh, yeah. But what's weird for me is I've gotten more frustrated the last 3 weeks than I have at any time in this season or in recent memory. And I think part of it is, I was throwing this back at you, is it's probably just a little bit of sort of fatigue, and I've been working on my game and just getting frustrated at for no real reason in rounds that are meaningless. That's the best part about it, is the last tournament I played in, the Better Ball with Fitz, you know, I was, you know, sort of in regular tournament guy mode, and I never got mad, and I hit some poor shots, and I just moved on. But, yeah, the other day, I mean, even yesterday, I hit a bunker shot that I didn't think was all that great, and I smashed the ground. You're like, I'm just like, where's, and I'm worried, because if I let, you know, old Howard out of the bag, you know, all of a sudden clubs will be going flying. I'll be in my car punching my windshield.
Well, I'm listening here. I'm all for you here.
No, I know.
But
I know you are. I just thought he'd listen. I just want everyone to know I haven't completely reached nirvana yet. I'm not there.
I think the only time you reach nirvana is when, I know, you're on the table in the gurney in the hospital and you see the white light. Yeah, that's when you get it all figured out. I think that... you know, it's interesting. In the times that I've had my meltdowns, it was only after a tournament of consequence. It was during my club championship in 2023 after the my four putt. But I think it's what golf means to you. And I also think that what happens is you mentioned it, golf fatigue. When we get tired, we just don't have the energy to deal with whatever's going on. I mean, that's why when people go on a diet, you know, diets don't work, but when people do, the beginning of the day, hey, they're fine. They eat according to the diet they want. But you get at the end of a day, tired, maybe you get home, didn't have the greatest conversation with your partner or the kids or something. And that's when the freezer door opens and you're standing there eating, you know, moose tracks. You know, with the door open.
What are moose tracks? Is that a chocolate thing?
That's a Kawartha ice cream.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
So good.
I don't know. I'm from Moose Jaw. I don't know anything. Oh, yeah. So you're sitting there. You're like, I'll have some ice cream.
Because you're tired.
Yeah, I get it.
And that's to be at our best, it needs energy.
Yes.
And when we don't have energy, I mean, you know, it's like whenever you've, you know, something's going on with you and someone in your, maybe one of your kids or your partner or your, you know, the lady in your life, whatever, and you're a little bit tired and something happens, that's when the grumpiness comes out, because you don't quite have the energy to step back and deal with it.
Absolutely. That is, I guess what I'm getting at with the idea of golf fatigue is that I'm, you know, I've run out of a little bit of energy to be buoyant. Here's the difference, though. So we're playing, and I hit this, you know, 158 yard 8-iron that went 142 yards anyway, and I hit it and then I smashed the ground and quickly, you know, replaced whatever hole I put in there, and it wasn't that bad.
Ground's softer, it's okay.
Exactly.
It's
ground's too soft at this time of the year. And then we walked the 142 yards to my ball, and the difference between old Howard and GSL Howard is that it didn't stay with me. Even though at the moment I was, you know, grumpy, a bit pissed, like aggravated, I think is a better word. I wasn't mad, I was aggravated by the shot.
Yeah.
By the time I got to my ball, it was long gone. And that's the difference, is in the olden days of my, you know, crises, I would not have been able to bring any, it would have lingered with me, and I would have been fixing it or fixated on it. That's a great word. I would have been fixated on why, as opposed to I have now developed this muscle of, okay, that happened, and yeah, I got pissed, but now I'm going to hit this next shot. And I was lucky. I hit a beautiful pitch shot. It went in the hole.
I mean, nice.
It went in the hole, but I don't know if it was worth the aggravation I got from my playing partners, who just chirped me mercilessly. Like, well,
you deserve it.
Are you through your little tantrum now? Does that make it all better? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, anytime you do any excavation work on a tee,
yeah,
that's, you're going to get chirped, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, old person forgetting the point I was going to make.
Take your time.
There's nothing wrong with getting a little pissed, you know, and saying a nasty word or something, or thumping your club down. There ain't nothing wrong. That's totally human. I mean, I think that some people might get it confused that when we talk about the show about, you know, enjoying your round, the people, the environment, they think it's, you know, everything's supposed to be all nicey-nicey, Pollyanna-ish. But if you're hitting the ball sideways or fat or something, I mean, that's not fun. And we're going to might get a little ticked. But it's, but it, as always, it's what do we do then? How do we respond to it? So, I mean, again, we're humans, so it means we're messy. We're going to fuck up. So it's to be okay with that. Well, and just move on.
I think that's been the major point, you know, certainly that I've been, you know, making and we've been discussing with each other for quite some time is I've said this, excuse me, years ago. It's not, yeah, things are going to sting, but they can't stay.
There you go.
And
yeah.
And when they stay is when you have a disaster hole. Not that I did. It was quite the opposite, actually. But when you have a blow-up hole or you're pissed off or you blow up at something, it's getting fixated on it.
Yep.
That ruins the rest of your round. Now, I'm nowhere near where I was. I could never ruin a round of golf anymore. I just don't have the capacity. I don't have the energy to keep that anger going whereas I used to when I was a younger man, Tim. I could keep that going for days. I would keep that going. But that's the barrier to scoring is getting angry and then, well, to two things. Starting to add it to the story that's developing, but it also hurts you on your next golf event, whatever that is, a chip, a putt, being so angry that you can't get past what just happened is the thing that kills your score.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, the whole cortisol thing.
Yep.
Heart rate goes up, they get in the story, and it takes 2, 3, 4 sometimes holes to get over it and settle down. So, but it's, like I say, it's, I think it's totally normal to have a little bit of a reaction, a hostile reaction to what happens. But then it's like, just, okay, oh, yeah, well, we'll just let that go.
Yes.
Good thing you had buddies to chirp you because your buddies, in a way, were assisting you in your reclamation project.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I sank that second shot, it was almost embarrassing. Because it was like, because after the little pout display that the howl man put on, I was like, I sort of hit it and went in the hole and I was kind of put my head down sheepishly like, okay, sorry about that. I want to hear about your, I want to tell you about a round I was invited on to a pretty, you know, fancy pants place. But first I want you to tell me about this round of golf you were saying, some cottage round you played.
Yeah. So every year we, a bunch of friends go up to, last year was Huntsville. This year we went up to Halliburton near Cobequenk. And my buddy Chris, he likes to golf. So we thought, what the hell? Let's get out. So he left it up to me to make the arrangement. So I had the choice to go to two courses. And I chose, me being a rather thrifty person, chose the less expensive course. And it was just really funny. We're driving along. This guy's a member of a very nice private club. And so we drive off the main highway and we're on this road. And it's one of those roads where, you know, they patch it every year. And you know, there's just, and it's starting to turn a bit. And I'm thinking like, oh my God, what are we going to turn into here? I mean, is it going to be, you know, one of those cottage courses where you're hitting off mats and the greens are just horrible, you know, one of those courses. Well, this place is called Blairhampton Golf Club, and we had an amazing time. And no, it doesn't have the grooming of a Glencairn or Blue Springs or anything like that, but it's just a beautiful golf course that goes up and down through the Halliburton Highlands there. And we just had such a great, great time. But part of the thing that I enjoyed was just going. So the clubhouse is this kind of really humble thing, probably, you know, made in 1960s. Yeah, I could do with an upgrade.
Kind of like you but and me, made in the early 60s, late 50s.
Exactly. Yeah. And you just, you know, one of those places you go into the golf shop, you pay your green fee, and you get a coffee and a paper cup, and it's a bunch of, you know, the starters there and the supers, you know, standing there, and you're just chatting and in this little thing. And I just love the feel of the place. So, and then we got on the course and we absolutely loved it. We had a hour frost delay, but I just think that, I just felt like really grateful to be in a place like that, to just have it work. And just Kelly, the starter, my God, he did everything in his power to get us out because there was a frost delay and we were going to be behind this group of about four or five groups of guys on a guy's weekend. And he said, I'll get you started on number six. I thought that was really cool.
So did you come back and play 1 through 5 at the end?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, nice. We just joined this couple that were on the first tee, and that worked out really nicely. And so, anyways, it's just nice to have to discover new golf courses, and how I was coming up against oh my gosh, is this course going to be to the standards my buddy might expect here? And oh, did I choose the right one? And you know, I can get thinking that kind of nonsense, you know, oh my God, did I cheap out or something? But we just had such a great time. So, yeah, that's mainly what that was about, was just
how. I'm sorry, where is this place again? Blairhampton, you said?
It's north, navigationally challenged. It's about 25 minutes from Cobequoc.
I'm not sure where that is.
Halliburton.
Okay.
Just kind of not quite all the way to Peterborough, north, kind of Kawartha's area.
You know, I've heard the term. I've heard of the place, Cobequoc, but I couldn't tell you.
People just like saying it.
Yeah, I love saying it.
The locals call it Kobe.
Well, I love that perspective, and I'm going to give you, we didn't discuss this before, but this will be an interesting
juxtaposition?
Yeah, sort of juxtaposition. So when I grew up in Moose Jaw, little Jewish boy from Moose Jaw, you know, there was a sand greens golf course that we played. Our course had grass greens, but just barely. And it was the Moose Jaw Golf and Curling Club. So in my life, my perspective on golf courses is, if it's, you know, no matter where it is, if it's better than the Moose Jaw Golf and Curling Club, you know, I think it's a great golf course. There's lots of golf courses I've played where people complain about them. And I look around going, if I got a chance to play this golf course when I was 13, it would have been the best golf course I've ever played. The place you played would have been like a fancy pants private course when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I give you that by way of saying that I've been lucky because I've also been a member at the National. I've played everything in between. You know, so yes, I have the perspective of the National and the way it plays, and the St. George's I was on a couple weeks ago. I played Islington and Toronto and all these courses. And I was invited out last week to a place called Goodwood. Have you heard of that place?
Yeah, I have.
And, you know, everything you described about where you were, like a country course or a cottage course, this place is like, it's hard to describe to people who, I've only ever been on one other place like this, and that was Redtail.
Yep, that's
where exactly there's what I was thinking. Yeah, there's no members. I mean, there's no. Now, there's another story to this place. They're turning it into something else. But for today, they've got 75 members or people, invitees. They get maybe 3 or 4 rounds a day of play. The place is spectacular. It's out near Uxbridge. Was started by the guy that owned the Stollery family that owned Angus Glen, and very, very wealthy, you know, group of people that started this place. But I was invited. This guy has an annual tournament with his buddies. There was about 20 of us. And normally they do it in October when, you know, sometimes when the weather's, you know, cold and windy and shitty. But last Friday was just a perfect summer's day. And the thing about this golf course is it is all you've heard, you know, very high-end, private course, everything is perfect. But the tournament is this. You take one step off the back tees, and that's how you play it. So played close to 7,400 yards.
Yipes.
Yeah. Now, his friends aren't very good golfers. My friend who knows him, how I got the invitation, he's the only other guy with a sort of a single-digit low handicap like me. Everyone else, I don't know what they shot. Like 130? I have no idea. But I played pretty decently from 7,400 yards and shot 84. Like, I was pretty... Yeah. Like, that was a pretty... But I will tell you, so beside the fact that it was this fancy-pants private course, what it was a good... It was a good perspective for me. Not that golf isn't hard for me, and it is. But I don't often have hybrids into par fours and three woods into par fours, and every par three was 230, and there were three par fours over 500 yards, par fives close to 600. Like, it was quite a challenge.
Yeah.
And but I so that day I didn't get mad at all, because I was just like, well, let me just see what this is like. And I got to tell you, having played it now, my sort of respect or whatever, my perspective, if you want to use it, I'll keep saying the same word, on how good young pros are. Because, like, there were some 500-yard par fours that you just know those guys would have hit it, you know, 340 off the tee, and they've got, like, you know, 160 in. I killed my drive on one of them, you know, 265 or 270, yep. And I had, you know, three wood in a couple of times. And, you know, it's like, it was sort of neat. I wouldn't want to do it every day. And I would love to go back and play the golf course from, you know, like my appropriate tees. But it was an experience. You know, I haven't done that in a long time. Played from way, way back like that. And the other thing it did, I'll finish by saying, it kind of lowered my expectations of what my day was going to be like. And you know what? Other than I made three double bogeys, two of them on shorter holes. So it wasn't like the length was the problem. But other than those three holes, I played pretty well. So I was six over on three holes. And I guess six over on the other 15, you know. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, wow. That's a pretty neat experience to be able to do that. But I love how... when you don't really have any expectations, golf can really just be kind of fun. Sometimes you can surprise yourself with the quality of your shots, but I think just overall, it's great to be able to go to a golf course like that and just appreciate the experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I remember I had a friend of mine back, he was, you know, an industry friend, shall we say, who is a member of the round table at Redtail. It'd be interesting what happened there. I think that the one of the guys' name was Chris Goodwin, and there was another guy, and they were partners, and that partnership went kablooey. So I don't know what happened to Redtail, but I remember one time playing with Don, and it was Saturday about 10 a.m., and we were the first group off.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole thing is just crazy. It's just crazy for someone like me to walk around and, like, just to have this experience, just everything right down to the clubhouse with having, like, these square giant shower heads. And, oh, if you want a beer, you just wander behind the bar and pour yourself a pint and all of that. Yeah.
Well,
how the other half lives.
Well, I would say the same. I start off by telling you about Moose Jaw because, you know, it's all pretty crazy for me. I mean, I still sometimes wonder, like, how did I go from there, you know, to playing, you know, the National and all these courses in between? But ultimately, you know, like, I like Redtail. I played it a couple times. Ultimately, it's still a golf course. I mean, I don't know what it would be like to play Augusta. I mean, probably never find out, but I can imagine that once you got over you're here and the environment and there's all these iconic things, you're still just a guy hitting a golf shot. You're still coming into three wondering, you know, how many yards it is. I can imagine that. And again, I've never played Pebble Beach, but ultimately they're all just golf courses, and at some point, you know, you're just golfing on them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't like the emphasis that people put on conditioning. I think a lot of it's almost like my course, if it's, you're talking private clubs, I get the pride factor in a golf course, but I think in many ways in North American golf, we're over the top with the emphasis on conditioning. I kind of say, I joke that, you know, if it has tees on every hole, if it has tees, a fairway mainly, and a green, mm-hmm. great.
Yeah.
And however it shows up, shows up. But, oh, I don't know. I don't think we need to go onto a screed about this, but I just think that we get crazy over here sometimes with conditions. I just read a neat piece in Golf Digest that the emphasis on fast greens is really kind of stupid, because to keep greens at a really fast pace, you have to have greens that have max of about 3 degrees of slope. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have greens that really don't have any kind of character to them. And then you also limit your pinning areas to the flattest areas of your golf course.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyways, I just think that when I go to a course like Blair Hampton and I have to hit the ball a little bit harder than I'm used to, that's fine. That's,
yeah, absolutely.
You have to adapt to golf. That's kind of, I think, what the game is.
You know, having been lucky enough, even in this past summer, to play, you know, somewhere in dozens, you know, in the teens and early 20s of different golf courses under tournament conditions, every private course I go to for an invitational, because they're hosting an event, they want to get that thing as, you know, minty as they can. And the difference between Westin or the National or this place or whatever and Moose Jaw and Blair Hampton, yeah, I mean, there's some of the famous, they're like, there's some of the heritage of the place, but generally it comes down to how fast they all love that. They all want to see, you know, members want to see, like, okay, let's see how these good players, you know, will play on these faster greens, and they're artificially fast. You know, like, I've played Westin.
What do you mean artificially
fast? Well, they're not the everyday speeds that their members play them on.
Yep, yeah.
I've played a bunch of different places this summer, both in under tournament conditions, and then, you know, just hacking it around with a buddy who's a member there, and it's nowhere near the speeds. Now, yes, private courses speeds are generally faster than, you know, Glen Cairn's got nice greens, and same with Blue Springs, but they're not super fast more than one or two occasions in a year, whereas a private course, they generally have faster greens overall, but on tournament day, they're just bananas.
Oh, absolutely. But here's something I was thinking about when I was reading that Golf Digest piece is, certainly this was the case at Blue Springs sometimes, and I've heard it at other courses, is saying, like, you know, I just played, you know, the course down the street, another private course, and their greens are really fast. I don't know why ours can't be as fast. And so they're kind of pissed off and envious and whatnot, as if this was it. Like, their course is a step below. And here's what I thought. I thought, you know why these guys are complaining? Because most golfers, to me, to experience, they struggle with getting the ball to the hole. Most people leave the ball short. And, you know, that's when you get the thing. Not most people leave it short, but it's super common to leave it short. And then you get called Alice, or, did you get caught up in your skirt? You know, kind of typical male bullshit. And I'm thinking, I want to get your view on this, that the complaint about it is that their ball came up short a good portion of the day, and it pissed them off. So if the greens was faster, it might have gone in.
That's a brand new perspective. I wouldn't have thought that they wanted faster greens because they don't hit it hard enough. What I laugh sometimes, especially a course like ours where we have a lot of members, there's 27 holes, and it's, you know, it's slow at the best of times. And when I hear guys talk about, well, these greens should be...
The pace of play?
Yeah. When the pace of play is slow, you know, on a difficult course, when it's windy and there's lots of bunkers, But I always laugh when the guys will talk about, yeah, these greens suck, you know, they should be faster. I go, yeah, because it would, because it would take 6.5 hours to play the place, because people would be three putting every hole. I mean, our green,
that's the National. Remember that story?
Absolutely.
You told?
Yeah. I three putted six times in a tournament, and I'm an okay player. So
yes,
but there's a perfect example. The day I played that tournament there, the green speeds were 12.7 on the flat, which means they were 13 plus on any kind of slope. I played it a few weeks later when they were back to their everyday speeds, which was still fast, 11 or 10 point, whatever. But it's reasonable. when they're really, really fast, it's just hard. Now, whether people complain, I mean, that's the only thing. People complain about everything at golf courses. I tend not to, because
a first world problem.
Well, not only that, but I always remember that I grew up, you know, on a pretty ratty golf course, and never knew the difference. Anyway, the whole point of this is to say that, you know, we're pretty lucky to, you know, to have gotten to play on some of these courses, and I would enjoy Blair Croft Hampton, Blair Witch Project Golf and Country Club.
Don't hit your ball in the woods.
What
kids.
Was it called? Bancroft. Seriously, I couldn't get it now on multiple choice. Let me see if I could do Blair Croft. What was it? Guys, give me a hint.
Think of the rich
Blair Hampton.
Where, yes, there you go. I do. That would do it.
Blair Hampton.
Yeah. Blair Hampton.
Well, listen, man, I got nothing left. I'm all out of gas.
How'd your better ball with Fitzy go?
Well, so I don't know if people remember that Charles and I have not made the dinner the last 2 years, meaning we were so pissed off. Well, mostly Charles, but me too. We were both disappointed the last couple of years with our play in the better ball, the Ontario better ball, that we had a bit of a joke, which was, we're not going to dinner. We're just going right to our car. And for months now, I've been texting him, whatever happens this year, we're going to have dinner. I don't care what we shoot. It's a bad look on us.
We're not going to be a bunch of sucks.
We're not going to be a bunch of suckholes. And and we started off pretty well. I think first hole we played, Chucky almost sank his second shot. So we got a birdie. And I said, dinner's looking good, my friend. And then things got a little bit murky there in the front nine. I think he made a few birdies. I made one. But it's a challenging course. I don't know if you've played Oakdale. I mean, I know you have, probably.
I have, yes. Yeah. Yes, that is a challenging course.
It's a challenging course, and I'm just going to say this now, having played this tournament 7 years in a row. Not my favorite place to play. I'm just going to say that. I played okay. Charles played great. He had some, you know, the thing is, we and I'm going to tell you about the guys we played with, because they ended up winning it. Ooh, so we were one under as a group, and they were six under as a group. But one of the players in their group, his name is Cam Burke, and Cam won the Canadian Amateur in 2009, and then, just to prove it wasn't a fluke, he won it again in 2010. And I've played with him and his dad before. That's their partnership. We played together last year at a qualifier. But Cam, also, besides being that good, also played on the Corn Ferry Tour for a couple of years.
Yeah, I thought he did, yep.
And now he's a guy in his 30s, got his amateur status back, couldn't be a nicer guy. So part of the greatness of that day was, not only did we play pretty good, decent, but watching Cam play, so their team was six under, and Cam was five under on his own ball. So when you get to watch a guy who's that good play well, to me, that was part of the great. We had Charles and I laughed our heads off a couple times about whether we were going to have dinner. Every time we make a bogey, I'm like, I'm not sure I'm that hungry for dinner. And
I knew having known you now, I knew that
from the get go, all day long it was day. Yeah, all day long it was, are we going to eat? Are we not going to eat? So, but watching this kid Cam Burke play, It really is. When you get to see somebody who's that good up close playing on the same hole as you, and, you know, seeing what he hits when I'm hitting 4 iron, he's got his 7 iron out. Like, and then I don't want to get into a thing that old guys do. Oh, you should have seen how long this guy was. But I'm telling you, I'm talking about his, not talking about, you know, like Arnold Palmer. Can you imagine Trump talking about Arnold Palmer's dick and he's still in the race? Can you imagine that?
I know. Well, I know a guy who used to be a PGA Tour official. He says that all at these private clubs are all private stalls. There's no way.
No,
like, Trump is just dreaming this bullshit.
Yeah, he talks a lot about other men's penises. Anyway, back to this guy. So not only is Cam Burke, former tour player, really,
the show
really
that covers everything.
This kid's not only exceptionally gifted as far as his ball striking, but he was having a good day. Like, I've seen him before where we both shot a similar score. I shot even par and he shot 1 under. But watching him shoot 67 when I shot a million, it was pretty cool. So for me, I decided that day that not only was I participating in this tournament, but I got a chance to see this guy, like, just really put on a bit of a show. Plus, he's such a nice guy. It was great. So for me, that was one of my takeaways. Yes, sir.
I just want to interject. Like, so from me, from time to time, but you more than me, you have the opportunity to play with people who are tour level.
Yes.
So it's one thing to stand, say, outside the ropes at Hamilton Golf and Country Club and watch PGA Tour players. But when you're that close, Hal, man, what do you notice the difference between a player of who's got a tour quality swing and approach to the game versus, you know, someone like you, you're a scratch player or the rest of us unwashed masses? What's different?
Here's what I would say. There's two things, and it's a great question. There's two things that stand out. One is the consistency of strike through the bag. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'll get up, like I played yesterday, and I was hitting it really, really good yesterday for me. And I would hit a great drive, but then I would slightly mishit, say, my 7-iron approach to the green. Maybe a bit thin, a bit, you know, or sometimes, you know, didn't quite get it. Watching Cam, and Charles too. But I would say this, and even Charles and I, you know, Charles made a bunch of birdies on his own, but he also made a bunch of bogeys. Cam didn't make any bogeys. But even Charles, who is as fine a player as you could watch,
oh yeah,
even he was like, this guy's got next level ball striking. So that was the first thing. The consistency of the way the ball, like, I'm sure in his mind he mishit a few, but not that we would notice. The second thing is, maybe there's a third, but the second thing you really notice is he's tour level through the game. So he misses a green, and when he pitches and chips and hits bunker shots and putts, they're also at a higher level than, say, your average good player. So yeah, I mean, there didn't when I watched him hit a couple shots where he had to not recover, but sort of a delicate shot around the green, he was just really good at that too. Whereas, you know, I have some holes in my game. We all do. You do. Yep. We all do. Where I may not be as good a putter as I am a ball striker, whatever it is. But so those are the things I've noticed playing with him and other guys at that level, where there's a consistency of strike all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that's when I think of, like, the times I've played with you and scratch players and plus handicaps, that there's that consistency thing is, I think that's what, you know, when most golfers, you know, come to me for help with their game. I was joking with somebody recently who also does golf lessons, et cetera. What's the number one thing people want? Consistency. And it's so hard to get, but that's what you notice as you go up the levels, is just that, wow, there's just not as much variation, especially through the bag.
You know, like, I, if you saw, I, I would, say that there's lots of shots I hit in a round of golf that you'd be like, really? The fuck was that? Like, really? Yeah, like, yeah, I, you know,
totally.
Like, you know, I've played a lot of golf recently, and there was a couple, I had a 3-wood, like, perfect lie, middle of the fairway, you know, 3-wood in my hand, and almost topped it. Like, yep. He wouldn't do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember it was 10 or 12 years ago, I got a game with Mike Alderman, who had, at the time, he had won the, you know, Mike,
yeah.
He's at the book launch. He had won the club championship at Blue Springs at least twice. So I finally got a game with him. As we're playing, I'm noticing that, you know, I hit my drives about as far as Mike. I hit my irons pretty solid, but every once in a while I hit a ball, you know, off the world, you know, a dead pull with an iron. It was a really stupid three putt. Mike just didn't do those things.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
So I, you know, he scrapes it around for like a 74. Me, I, you know, at the time I scraped it around for an 83, you know?
So you know, that is really one of the, again, between me and, or guys like me and Cam Burke, there's a wide ocean of talent. But I play a lot with guys that you've described, you know, people that can shoot in the high 70s and low 80s, and they don't really hit it much differently than I do. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a bit more of consistency all the way through my game. So we might hit the same, you would hit the same tee shot as me. And at the end of the round, you know, I'm going to shoot a couple or three over par, where you might shoot a couple or three over 80. But I'll tell you, I played a round on Monday with Doug Brophy, finished fourth in the Ontario Order of Merit this year. So he's that senior. Good. Senior.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, GSL. I think I finished 83rd once again, the 83rd best ranked senior in Ontario. So there's that guy, another guy named Colin Chung, me and Tim Southcott. And between the four of us, we've won 11 senior club championships.
Wow.
A lot of club championships. Cool. So good players.
Yeah.
And I can tell you right now, there were some shots that day that you would just be like, what? Shanks and pull hooks and dribbles and, you know, like, not, and these are all pretty decent players. It's so the difference between those guys like Doug Brophy and a guy like Cam Burke is that Cam Burke's ball striking would just be elevated beyond that. But to the average guy, you know, that those type of players would be like, wow, they're pretty good, but nowhere near what a guy like who could play on the Corn Ferry Tour would be like.
Yeah. I also think that people who play at that next level, I may be saying just really obvious, their mental games are so much stronger. They don't get as bent out of shape. They don't, they're, you know, if they slightly mishit a shot, which we might be able to not detect, but they don't go into a, down a rabbit hole trying to figure out what went on or get yeah. caught in a story. I just think that they're stronger in all so many ways. But did we ever, just going back to how we started this segment, did we ever find out whether you guys went to dinner or not?
We did, actually. We finished tied for four. Thank you. We were very proud of that. We finished one shot out of the top 10 at one under. Nice. So we were eighth place was one under or two. No, eighth place was two under and we were one under. So we ended up in a tie for 14th. And we went in, had dinner.
Damn good.
Yep. We went in and had, it's our best finish in years.
Great.
Went in and had dinner and we're grown up about it and wished everyone well and we were on our way. Which is, I think, a great place to finish off this.
Real quick. What didn't you like about Oakdale?
Well, to be fair, I've never played it from anywhere but the back tees that we played in that tournament. You know, so we're playing it pretty long. I mean, for fall golf, we're playing it close to 6,750 or 6,800 yards, whatever it is.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's a bit, you know, I'm hitting a lot of longer clubs. You know, it's been seven. I've gone around it a bunch of times now. I don't know. Like maybe the fact that I never play great there is part of the.
Could
you know,
be.
Might be.
Yep.
You know, there's certainly plenty of great holes. There's a few weird ones.
Yeah.
The fact that the 1-9 we were on, it finishes with two par fives. That's kind of odd. You know, it's got a couple of really, really, really tough holes, and it's got a couple of kind of short, funky ones. I think the greens are great, but they're also a bit challenging. That little par three, I can't remember what nine's it on, but it's a short par three, but the green tilts so much, it's almost impossible to putt it. I mean, I know it's famous and everything, but yeah, I mean, I had heard that when the Canadian Open was there, the tour players didn't love it either. I'm not saying that's why I didn't, but yeah, it's it's fine. But yeah, I'm hoping to be back again next year when I'm going to be. Every year I say, Charles, the same thing. Listen, man, I'll understand if you want to drop Grandpa from the team. Because as I've mentioned, Charlie Fitzsimmons could literally have anybody else closer, you know, in his world of guys he plays with. Like, he just played the U.S. four ball with a guy named Kevin Fawcett, who's a great player, not Scott Fawcett. He played the J.R. Williams with Kevin. They did really well. If he had Kevin, Charles could win this. I'm not saying it's not possible he can win it with me, but it's not likely. But yeah, Charles with anybody else his age would be in contention, you know. So,
well, maybe he has lots of fun with you.
Oh, I do. I definitely make him laugh. I definitely give him the gears.
Of course.
I definitely get into his anyways, Mr. Tim O'Connor, I gotta go. I gotta tell you, I got my kid upstairs. I wanna go visit with her. It's always great visiting with you though. Will you play a golf again before it snows, do you think?
I don't know. Not unless it's a particularly long fall. I was supposed to play Saturday, but my buddy had to bail. So, that, you know, my game at Blair Hampton was fun. So that might be the last one of the year. And if so, I'm totally cool with it. But the indoor season is ramping up. I'm starting to book lessons at the golf house. The golf league's going. We got a tournament, if you will, going on Sunday night. So it's like the golf season keeps going, just moves indoors.
Well, I will tell you this. If there's an opportunity for you and I to sneak out before it snows, we should take it. I'm serious.
Yeah, no, that's a good.
That'll be fun.
Call there, pal.
Yeah, let's do it. I'll send you a note when we're done this.
Okay.
And I'll say, hey, listen, if it's nice toward the end of next week, if you can tear yourself away from whatever it is you do all day. All right.
My wife wonders the same damn thing.
Listen, everybody, don't forget to go get a copy of Getting Unstuck, 7 transformational things that are good for you. And
7 transformational practices.
Yes, indeed.
Take your belt.
Tim O'Connor, OConnorGolf.ca. This program produced by the Humble and Fred Radio Network, or Podcast Network. Find out more at HumbleandFredRadio.com. Thanks again to TaylorMade Golf and, of course, Oscar Bravo. We'll see you next time. Thank you for all, and to all a good night.